This is Brian Clark with Trevor Tews. Trevor, I was wondering if you could kind of go back to the inception of Mithridian and how it came to be.
Yeah. You know, I've been involved quite a bit with startups in the second half of my career. I was with ICI Pharmaceuticals, became AstraZeneca the first half of my career, but I've done several startups since. And in Madison, I just recognized this opportunity to take early stage technologies from the University of Wisconsin, which it has some tremendous technology, and try to add value to them. You know, take, say, a drug idea and develop it through to, say, phase two clinical trials, at which point it will become very valuable. And Madison seemed an ideal spot to do that. So Mithridian, you know, it was quite serendipitous. We were having a meeting with the chairman of Bioponds and with a client.
And Bioponds is?
Bioponds is my consulting company. Uh-huh. It's a biotech consulting company. We're having a meeting with a client in a golf club, Maple Bluff Golf Club. And our chairman used to be director of the Weissman Center in the university. And he was hopping between our meeting and the annual trustees dinner. And he said, I'll bring a couple of scientists over so you can talk to them. And he brought Jeff Johnson over. And Jeff was telling my wife, Patty, who's also in Bioponds, about an interesting technology he developed. And it was thinking, you know, how do I start a company? And Bioponds was ideally positioned to help Jeff start a company. So, you know, I met with Jeff in the university, told me about his inventions, and it seemed like a really interesting new drug approach to Alzheimer's disease. So, you know, we talked about the science, then we signed a confidentiality agreement, and then we talked to WARF, the technology transfer arm of the university, and eventually signed an agreement to move ahead with forming a company around Jeff's technology. That's how it started, pure serendipity.
Did you consider any other working with any other scientists?
Oh, yes. I'd been talking to WARF for quite a while about possible opportunities, and we were looking at some of them. That was one on their list, but it was quite serendipitous that we met with Jeff, you know, outside of that forum.
What was it that you liked about his research that made things click?
You know, first of all, Alzheimer's is an enormous problem and enormous unmet medical need and very big market opportunities. So it looked like something one could form a company around. And Jeff had an idea which could get to the disease process in Alzheimer's and try to stop the disease process. Now, there isn't a drug anywhere that can stop the disease process in Alzheimer's. The neurons die. And that was part of it. So big market, big medical need. He looked like he had a technology that might address the medical need. But the thing that really clinched it for me was he had a drug lead. And a drug lead is a chemical that has an effect on a biological system that might be therapeutic. And it's something that chemists can get their teeth into. They've got a chemical structure that can start synthesizing variants of it. And that's how we develop a drug. So that was the exciting thing.
And in layman's terms, what would this lead have done?
The lead would activate some systems in the brain that would protect the neurons against a toxic substance in Alzheimer's. So neuroprotection, we call it. Yeah.
And so that was about 2005
right about then, yeah.
And it was 2006 that you got the governor's business plan?
No, it was actually in 2005. So we wrote a business plan around this. And I've done many business plans in the past. We thought we'd have a crack at the governor's business plan competition, and, you know, we...
You won it.
Yep.
And that provided how much?
It was, you know, the value was about $100,000. So we... right now we're sitting in, 2,400 square feet of labs and offices here in the research park. We got a year's free rent here and $20,000 of cash, which paid all of the legal and startup costs. So it was tremendous from that point of view.
And where did the other financing come from?
I just say one other thing about the business plan competition. apart from the cash value of the prize, we've had enormous value in terms of getting some exposure about the company, and it positioned the company as a company that has a really good plan and good management. So, finance. Yeah, our first finance came from angel investors, a group called Rosetta Partners in Lake Forest, Illinois. Had a network of high net worth individuals, and they've provided our first funding in February 2006. I should also say Wisconsin Investment Partners, an angel group in Madison, also participated in that.
And can you say how much that funding was?
Oh gosh, it was. We did several closes to accommodate their timelines. We raised about $1.1 million in the first year. And then very importantly, venture investors got interested in the company. And so in the second half of our Series A funding, which totaled about $2.2 million, venture investors came in with a big investment. And that was really quite a critical inflection point for the company, because having a bona fide venture capital company enabled us to get loan, lease finance on a key piece of equipment, and the equipment was almost $250,000. So it's a big investment, and that triggered the ability to get a lease investment.
A lease funding,
I should say. Yeah.
And lease funding is
The manufacturer, the supplier of the equipment, has a finance company, and they basically gave us a deal on lease, which we couldn't have got without the venture capital behind us. Yeah.
And Venture Investors is right here in Research Park.
It is. It has an office here in Research Park, and it has an office in Michigan. Yeah.
So for the last 2.5 years, you did testing on the lead, or?
Yeah, you know, the process of developing a drug lead to a drug candidate is one that you think it's got all the properties that you need in a drug. You know, you can dose it by the route you want, maybe by mouth. Mm-hmm. It will last long enough, it gets the right place, and the body has no side effects that you can discern, and it has a therapeutic effect. So you've got to get from drug lead to drug candidate. The drug lead has some of those properties, but not all of them. And the way we do it is the chemists, with a small molecule as this is, the chemists would take the original molecule and keep changing it. And we track all of these activities through laboratory tests, like how long does it last in the body, or how much of it gets absorbed by mouth, or how potent, you know, how little compound do you need to achieve the biological effect. And so the chemists made several hundred compounds, actually. And we ended up, after about 20 months, with four compounds, any of which we think would be a drug candidate and we could take into clinical trials, into toxicology and then clinical trials. So that's what we did in 20 months. And it's a team of pharmacologists, chemists, people doing analytical work.
All based here?
All based here, yeah.
And how many people do you... How many people work here?
You know, we have about 7 scientists working. We have about 10 in the team. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So after the 20 months, you concentrated on those 4?
Yeah, yeah. And then, as you probably heard today, we actually had a problem in that when we... looked for efficacy in the preclinical laboratory models. Although the drug was orally available, you could dose it by mouth, it got into the brain in adequate quantities, it didn't live up to its promise, basically. It didn't have the therapeutic effect we wanted, which was quite a disappointment. You know.
And when did you find that out?
We suspected it around about October 2007, and it took us through to the end of the year to really nail down that, you know, it wasn't living up to its promise.
Had you experienced that before with any startups where you've gotten that far along and then it didn't work out?
You know, I think it's pretty typical of drug research projects that some of them will fail, will just not get there for a variety of reasons. And so the whole process of drug research development is kind of winnowing down a large number of compounds until you get one that fulfills all the requirements of being a drug. And sometimes, you know, you just can't achieve everything you need to achieve in one molecule. So
there's a saying, I think, that of all the restaurants that start, that only a tiny fraction will be around in a few years. In drug discovery, is there something like that only 10% make it or less?
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you have a drug candidate, it is around about that number. If you take the global picture, no, I'd say there are, you know, you've got to qualify that a little bit. You've got to say, well, some people are not taking very good compounds forward. You know, they've not done their homework. They've not done the necessary work. And there's a flaw that someone more diligent would find in those compounds. So I think the success rate is probably higher than the global success rate. But that's a risk. And the reward is big. The risk is also quite big. The way pharmaceutical companies manage this is like an investor manages a portfolio. You hedge your risks across a number of projects. The difficult thing for a startup company is you can't have many projects running at once.
Right.
So the risk is there.
Did you take a different tack on when it didn't work the first time? Did you think, well, maybe if we alter it, it would work? Or
we do understand why it didn't work, and it's not something that we can fix. And it's proprietary information, so I can't go into any more detail than that, but it's not the sort of project where we could go back and fix it. Sometimes you do have that situation where a drug might have a side effect, and you can nail it down to a particular feature in the drug. You can go back and remove that feature and get a drug. In fact, the company I worked for previously had a first drug which went in the clinic. It worked beautifully, but there was some cancer-causing activity in animals. They went back and changed the molecule, and it was a blockbuster, you know. And it was a very simple change in the molecule. You know, they already had it in their collection. So
when was it that you had to sit down with your investors or whatever and say, sorry?
Oh, around about the end of the year, you know. Around about the end of 2007. But, you know, we were aware of the risk of having just one project in the company. And from about May 2007, we'd been in discussion with Cognitive Pharmaceuticals of Toledo, Ohio, to bring in another project alongside ours. So the aim was to then have two projects. And ideally, you know, we'd like to build up to three or so projects. Because then we have three times the opportunity, and we reduce our risk as well. So we'd been talking to our Cognitive Pharmaceuticals, and they had a really interesting additional approach to Alzheimer's. And we talked all the way through 2007, trying to understand, you know, what they had, and working out whether the combination of the two companies might be synergistic. They had a really interesting drug, and we decided before our compound experienced any problems that we would like to merge, and we'd set off on the legal process of doing that. And it took longer than we expected because there are a lot of parties involved, but that's what we announced just yesterday.
So it wasn't as if one ended and then you had to scramble to find a new one. It was already in the works?
Yes, yeah. We'd already done a lot of work in our own labs on the cognitive compound.
Mine will probably do it next. In any case, did it make it, because the first attempt didn't work with Jeff's, did it make it any more difficult to get financing for this combination of cognitive and Mithridian? Or
it made the negotiations more difficult, obviously, because we're
with cognitive?
With all the parties, yeah. Yeah, naturally. It was a complication, as it were. You know, but we overcame that and successfully closed the deal.
But Mithridian will stay here?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. So, you know, the combination of cognitive and Mithridian's working out really well. We had the what we call a preclinical drug development here. That's everything we need to go from a drug lead to a drug candidate. Mm-hmm. In Toledo, they had the research in Bill Messer's lab, which is supported by National Institutes of Health. Mm-hmm. And we're putting the drug development in Toledo, so the clinical development. Once you have a drug candidate that's proven safe in animal studies, ready to go in the clinic, then that's being done by a team we're building around a Toledo operation. So it's worked out really well. I mean, we're now one of the... I guess there are only about three companies probably in Wisconsin who now have the capability of taking a drug from a drug lead all the way into the clinic. The others are like Quintessence, Bone Care, and Deltanoid. Yeah.
So was Cognitive further along than Mithridian?
Yeah, they were about a year. You know, we had a drug candidate. It would have taken us about a year to get it ready for clinical trial had we not had the problem with it. They were, at that point, ready to go into clinical trial.
In something like this, is it the saying, if at first you don't succeed, try again, or is there anything, sort of a phrase like that you would...
I think so. Drug discovery and development isn't easy. And, you know, in a large company, they'll work years and years on solving problems with a particular drug. People say to me, well, why can you do it when a large company, or how can you do it when it takes all the resources of a large company? The answer to that is we just focus on one area, you know, and we have capabilities as good as a drug company within that area. They can run hundreds of projects. We're on one or two or three, you know.
Are large companies still doing drug discovery, or is it more companies like yours?
Yeah, they're doing drug discovery. I think what's happening is that drug discovery doesn't scale up as well as, say, marketing or drug development. You know, it's a very creative process, and so we've seen companies like GlaxoSmithKline have actually broken up their research into centers of excellence to try to get the creativity and benefits of being small while in a large organization. So it doesn't scale well, and that's why small companies can focus on an area and do well.
So what is next for Mithridian in terms of working with Cognitive and its lead?
Yeah, the next thing is to get into clinical trials, and that's going to happen during this year, sooner rather than later, and so we're poised to do that. There's a lot of work to be done there. We need to meet the FDA regulations, Code of Federal Regulations, good clinical practice, make sure we don't compromise the safety of any of our volunteers, and so on. But we're well on the way now to putting that organization in place and choosing the clinical site for the first trial.
What happens in a clinical trial?
So, the very first time in man, it's called First Time in Man, that drug has never been inside a human before. There's a very cautious process, starting with a very low dose, and it's called a single ascending dose study. So you give a single dose to maybe half a dozen people in a staggered way. You observe them, and if there are no untoward effects, everyone feels okay, you'd then move on in about a week or 10 days or 2 weeks to a higher dose. Observe them again, move on. We have a medical doctor on our staff, or as a contractor, and the clinic has a principal investigator who's an MD, and they confer and decide whether they can increase the dose or not. They have all the lab tests behind them as well, and they have electrocardiograms, and so first time in man is always a very cautious approach until you find a dose that can be tolerated.
Will that be done here or in Toledo, or?
It'll be done in an independent clinic somewhere in the Midwest. These centers are very specialized because for the first time in man, they're called contract research organizations that manage trials, and there are specialized clinics that do this.
And in a best case scenario, or what would be the next steps, and how quickly could it actually become a?
Yeah, so that should take through 2007, and the first part of 2009 would be what's called a multi-ascending dose study. Dose for 7 days, increase the dose. And then we'd be into phase two. Phase two is where you first put the drug into a patient, into an Alzheimer's patient. And initially it's again trying to establish that it's safe and get the right dose. But then we move on to therapeutic, and we're looking for an improvement in memory, cognition, behavior, and so on and so on.
So the first patients or testers, they wouldn't have Alzheimer's, they'd just be regular people?
Yeah, and we're just looking for safety. You know, are there any side effects that can be discerned in the compound?
Do you have any other projects that are in the works?
Yeah, along with the drug candidate MCD386 from Cognitive, there's what we call platform technology. They have a lot more compounds, and we've identified
Cognitive does?
Cognitive does, yeah. We've identified a second target, which I don't want to talk about the actual target today, but it's another central nervous system disorder, very serious one, and we'll work together in collaboration between Madison and Toledo to come up with a second drug candidate for that condition. We'll probably also improve upon our first one. You know, that's called a follow-on compound.
The first one meaning what?
The one we're going to clinical trial now. Almost certainly we'll find something we want to improve. And so, you know, that's how we'll build up a portfolio of drug candidates.
How did you come to hook up with Cognitive?
We're actually introduced by venture investors, our venture capital company. Cognitive had got to the stage where they needed external funding to develop the drug, and they went to venture investors. They needed a management team, which we were going to hire, and venture investors put us together and said, "You should talk." And we did.
Are you the management team, though, or?
No, we now have an extended management team of employees and consultants or contractors. So. Wayne Haas was CEO of Cognitive, is going to run the Toledo operations. Ted McGuire, who was about probably 30 years in Park Davis and Pfizer, very experienced drug development guy, will be on the executive team. We have Bruce McCarthy, an MD who was with Pfizer and Abbott as our medical advisor. We have Frank Bimaster, who was involved in the development of Prozac, Zyprexa, Strattera, you know, big, big drugs for Lilly. He was with Lilly 30 years. Frank's on the team. So we're building a nice team now.
Will the number of employees grow here?
Right now, in this year, not a lot. And we won't have many employees in Toledo either. But we're building a much bigger team of contractors and consultants. It's called semi-virtual approach to drug development, where we do the project management and we hire people and contract with companies to do the studies.
So if this is successful, when could you see selling? Would you sell the company or sell the results to a drug company? Or
you know, the investors will want an exit, you know, where they can make a return on their money. And the two most likely approaches to that would be an initial public offering on NASDAQ or a trade sale of the company.
For Mithridate?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I'd much prefer to have an IPO if possible. Uh-huh. The market is really capricious, as you probably know. You know, bear markets, bull markets. An IPO would enable us to build an operation and keep an operation in Wisconsin and create, you know, well-paid jobs and retain value in Wisconsin and ultimately retain independence. Ultimately, that's the ideal. Investors then can get their return by selling their shares on the open market. But the IPO market is capricious. You need to achieve a number of milestones to get there. You know, we would need two or three drugs in clinical trials to do that. And possibly a partner, a large pharmaceutical company partner. But it's been done hundreds of times, so there's no reason why we shouldn't do it. Bone Care did it in Madison, you know. Tomotherapy did it. Nibelgen could have done it if they weren't sold to Roche, so I'd like to do that.
And it would probably be several years down the road at the earliest? Or
I think we could get into that position in three or four years, But it's very hard to project out that far. You know, that would be our aim.
And then you would stay, you would continue to run Mithridium?
I'm, you know, my view is I'm here as long as I'm adding value. If the company needs a different type of person to run it in the future, I'd step aside and hand over to them. You know, I'm a shareholder in the company, so that would make good sense too.
Could you foresee yourself doing another startup down the road?
Yeah, I've done several. I'm concentrating on Mithridium right now.
Yeah. Has this startup been any different than the other startups you were involved with?
You know, I think it's been a little tougher in the Midwest. For instance, in the Madison region, we don't have a large pharmaceutical company, so there's not a pool of management and experienced people in the area. Venture capital and angel capital have been in relatively short supply in Wisconsin. I mean, the last 2 years have seen an enormous increase, though. The number of people in the Wisconsin Investment Partners angel network has doubled, I think, in that time. Uh-huh. And venture investors themselves closed a $150 million fund. I think they have $200 million under management now. And so their capabilities increased a lot. But those two things probably have made it harder to get started in Wisconsin than you would in a more established biotech center.
And the startups you did before were where?
I did in London.
Uh-huh.
And in Maryland. Uh-huh. I guess I had companies in London with New Zealand technology, and in Maryland with British technology. We also had an operation in California in Hayward.
Uh-huh.
So I've been involved in a number of different types of startups.
Yeah. And you did your graduate work here, or...?
I did my postdoctoral research here. So after I got my PhD, I spent 3 years in Wisconsin. And that was the connection, really. Uh-huh. Yeah.
If to do it over again, are you happy that you established Mithridium here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's a bit more challenging, but it's also a great place to build a business. And there's no doubt that the University of Wisconsin is a real powerhouse. WOF is a very professional technology transfer outfit. There's a good entrepreneurial spirit here. I think there is quite a strong biotech cluster developing in Wisconsin, especially in the Madison region. So it is a great place to do business.
Anything I didn't ask you about Mithridium or?
Wow. You know, with my experience of working as chief financial officer and CEO of a couple of public companies, what we've tried to do with Mithridium is right from the beginning, behave as though we're not a startup but a more established company. And so in terms of the board, the corporate governance, good plans, accounting, financial management, and so on, we try to excel and try to build a brand for Mithridium that will help us raise the finance we need and recruit the people, license the technology that we need. So that's been the approach here. It's for us to judge whether that's successful or not. But winning the Governor's Business Plan competition was really helpful in terms of building that brand.
And Mithridium again means?
Oh, it's really one of the toughest things when you start a company is naming it, because almost every name has been claimed by someone.
Yeah.
Mithridium was derived from a ruler, probably, I think, in the Middle East in about 600 BC, called Mithridates. And our Torstein, actually, our founder, suggested using Mithridates as the basis of a company and came up with the idea of Mithridium. When we Googled it, we didn't see a single hit, so that's why we chose it.
But Mithridates was a healer, or...?
Yeah, he developed what he called the universal antidote to poisons, which was kind of interesting. It was a mix of something like 40-odd different natural things, herbs and roots and snake venom and stuff. And it appeared to have worked, but at least much more recently, medieval times, there were things called Mithridate jars, which contained this mix of antidotes to poisons.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I guess we're not developing antidotes to poison, so...
Did you have any personal connection with Alzheimer's? Any, in,
like, no, I, you know, my mother has a severe case of dementia. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's of the Alzheimer's type. It's very hard to diagnose, obviously. But, no, other than that. And that postdated, that was after we started Mithridium. But it's a major problem, you know, with us baby boomers.
Something to think about.
Getting towards the age that it strikes. It's going to be an enormous problem for Social Security.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.